A little flare, and that will get down in front of a view. Kroeber to the plate, the throw, and she's safe. And UCLA makes it an even dozen. And they are back on top with a 12th national championship.
UCLA with a walk-off single after Oklahoma tied it with a homer in the top of the seventh, bottom of the seventh. UCLA wins it on the walk-off. They win the championship first time since 2010, knock off Oklahoma in two straight in the best of three series down at OKC. Final score, UCLA 5, Oklahoma 4 last night. All right, it is eight-man All-Star Game week. Dusty, our sports director, is over in Beloit, and he is joined by some special guests this morning. Good morning, Dusty.
Yeah, good morning, Wade. We're here with the Osborne Bulldog representatives here at the eight-man All-Star Game, and we'll talk first with Darnell Holloway. He's closest to me. I'm glad I got tall guys I can use as wind blocks here for the interviews today. But, Darnell, you've had an opportunity to meet some of your teammates so far. How do you think this group looks as far as how you might gel here this week?
Everyone looks good. We're all pretty gelling pretty well, so I think it's going to be a great week with everybody.
What are some of the biggest things you're hoping to get out of this week as you prepare for college and go to Fort Hays State on your next step?
Obviously, just a good experience with everyone, and obviously want to win. But, yeah, I think it's going to be, with all the good people here, I think it'll be good competition for me going into college.
All right, Darnell Holloway, I'll let you get back to it here. And Jordan Wary joining us now. Jordan, we documented it a little bit during our profiles that we ran, and the fact that, and we'll talk a little bit more about it as we come up this week. But you didn't start playing football until your junior year, and I know that you were happy that Coach Reiner and them talked you into it. What's it been the experience like over the last 2 years playing Bulldog football?
It's just been great playing under Coach Reiner and Coach Wise and all the coaches. They just helped me shape into the athlete that I am. I mean, football helped me tremendously. Not only it just makes you a better person, but it just teaches you how to work hard.
And looking ahead of this week, what are some of the biggest things you're looking forward to in improving your game here this week before you go off to start play basketball in college?
It'll definitely help me get in shape a little bit. And playing some of the bigger guys here, we don't see that many big people in our league, so it's going to be good for me.
Jordan Wary will let you get back to it as well. Cade Miller joining us now. I wish there was a better spot. This is so open here that there's not a lot of good spots to talk. But Cade joining us now from Osborne. You've had the opportunity to play a lot of eight-man football, and you understand the game. And I know when I talk to coaches, they're always worried about you, the opposing coaches, about what you can do. What do you think you can bring to an All-Star game like this?
I'd say just I like to go out there and win. I mean, so I feel like when there's that energy, everyone else around us is going to want to win that bat too.
How exciting is it for you to have a game like this as you also get prepared to play college football and you can get yourself back into that football shape before you go to camp there at Bethel?
Just the competition, you know. I mean, all these guys out here are going to push me like I like to be pushed and just show me all my flaws that I can work on. So,
Cade Miller from Osborne, we'll let them all get back. We appreciate them for joining us. I'm going to go out. A little bit of plot might be a little bit more out of the wind, but again, we appreciate them to join us here this morning. The Osborne kids put in a lot of great work over the last 4 years. Obviously, a solid program that they have, and they're working hard already this week to get their team in position in the Division II West All-Stars to be able to have a chance to win a game coming up on Saturday. So we're looking forward to seeing all those Osborne kids tomorrow. We're going to chat with a couple others from the D2 West as well. So a lot of area athletes that are competing here this week and already getting after it here in Beloit.
All right. Did you have a chance to attend any practices last night, first night of practice?
Yeah, last night I did. And the Division I West didn't show me anything last night. Like, they were just kind of just talking, really just walking through a lot of stuff, not really running a whole lot of drills. The Division II West, it's raw, obviously, right now. People getting back into the swing of things and learning different offenses and things like that. So that's been kind of it's a process. It doesn't take as long with All-Stars as it does with a normal team, but you can see that rawness and you know, that rust that they're trying to wear off here as we go this week. So I think that D2 West team, though, has some pretty good athletes, and they could cause some problems for the East from what I saw last night.
All right, our coverage begins, of course, on Saturday morning, 9:30, an eight-man All-Star Game radio network, and here on KD Country 94, kdcountry94.com, eightmanallstars.com, as pregame at 9:30, Division II game at 10, followed by the Division I game at 1:30, pregame at 1 o'clock. Why don't you tell people what you have on Twitter, on Facebook, and profiles you have, and things that are posted at 8manallstars.com.
Yeah, on our 8-Man All-Star podcast, we've actually got all the audio profiles now posted from our area athletes. There's 13 audio profiles that will be there at the podcast at 8manallstars.com. Right now, I've already done feature stories that you can go back and read on the players from Thunder Ridge, Rock Hills, as well as Brody Cogren of Pike Valley. And then today, Drew Biggs, you heard if you were listening to the sportscast this morning, you heard a story about Drew Biggs from Lincoln, who's playing for the D1 West squad. That story's up, and then coming up here this afternoon and this evening, we'll have a little story about the Sylvan Lucas All-Stars, which Ben Labertu is an assistant coach here for the D2 West squad, and he's got a couple kids and Tyler Barrientes and Sam Prince that are playing here this week. So that's what's in store and coming up at noon and 5 here today as well, and then that'll be posted. All that information, you can go back and listen to those sound bites, and got some cool pictures and everything there at 8manallstars.com.
All right, stay on the line, Dusty, if you would. We're going to hear one of these little profiles that we have on our promos about Sylvan Lucas's Sam Prince, and we'll be back with you on the Sports Ticket in a moment.
The following 8-Man All-Star Game player profile is brought to you in part by the State Exchange Bank in Mankato, Thompson OK Tire in Beloit, Midway Co-op, proud to be local farmer-owned, the Guaranty State Bank and Trust Company, and by Boner Welding in Jewell. The 34th Annual 8-Man All-Star Games return to Beloit, Kansas on Saturday, June 8th as the best 8-Man football players in the state square off in a battle between West and East. One of this year's participants is Sam Prince of Sylvan Lucas High School. Prince will be playing for the Division II West squad, and during his playing career as a senior at Sylvan Lucas was a Topeka Capital Journal and Wichita Eagle honorable mention All-State lineman and an 8-Man Division II District 5 first team offensive lineman and defensive lineman. Prince is excited to have the opportunity to play in this year's 8-Man All-Star Games and to strap him up with a teammate, Tyler Barrientes, and with Coach Ben Labertu, who's an assistant this year.
I'm excited. Poured up a lot of time into. It's just great to get to go out there and play again. Had him all 4 years of high school, for Labertu's coach, and I've played with Tyler since grade school and known him well, and both great people and great to play with, and yeah, just excited overall.
Tune into Kitty Country 94 and on the web at 8manallstars.com Saturday, June 8th, as Sam Prince and the rest of the 8-Man All-Stars compete in the 34th Annual 8-Man All-Star Games in Beloit. This 8-Man All-Star Game player profile was brought to you in part by Cunningham Telephone and Cable, Connect with Us, Brunchart Corporation in Downs, the Bennington State Bank in Sylvan Grove and Lucas, Sunflower Manufacturing, There's Only One Sunflower, and by the Schooler Company in Downs.
Cuthbert drives it deep to left field, and that is a two-run home run. His second in the last week.
Chesley Cuthbert called up recently after the Royals parted ways with Chris Owings. He hits his second homer with the Royals. Two-run shot, but that wasn't enough. The Royals led 2-0. Glenn Sparkman is cruising along through just 80 pitches. He got hit hard, but it was at people. And the sixth inning, after five scoreless innings, he gave up a leadoff double to Mookie Betts on a fly ball to right center that Whit Merrifield just missed being able to catch. And then with one out, manager Ned Yost relieved Sparkman to right-hander Scott Barlow, and he allowed the inherited runner to score plus two more, and just like that, the Red Sox took a 3-2 lead. Sparkman gave up three hits, one run over five and a third, and Scott Barlow is really good for the Royals for a stretch this year. Back on May 14th, had an ERA of 1.77. Since then, he's given up 12 runs over 8 2/3. That's an ERA of over 12. And the Royals' bullpen just kind of, well, you could say lost the game for him. They were in control at the point when the bullpen came in. Here's Ned on pulling Sparkman after just 80 pitches.
You know, we took a two-run lead going into the sixth there, and, Sparkman's high water mark was 68 pitches, so we were going to take him to 80 or around there, and he got right to the 80 mark, and, then we decided to, bring in our one of our most productive relievers to this point in Barlow, and it just wasn't his night.
Royals now 19-41, and it'll be Jacob Junis on the hill for KC tonight against Chris Sale, who is one of the best pitchers in baseball up till this year. He's 1-7 this year. ERA of 4.35. Jake Junis 4-5. ERA over 5. Game 2 of the series between the Red Sox and the Royals in KC tonight at 7:15. The Royals did have day 2 of the Major League Baseball draft. Here's who they selected. Yesterday in the third round, they took a right-handed college pitcher, Grant Gambrill of Oregon State. He's 21 years of age, 6'4", starting pitcher, but probably be a reliever in the bigs. We shall see, although maybe he could be a rotation guy. In the fourth round, the Royals took a second baseman, Michael Massey, also age 21 of Illinois, and the Royals took a whole bunch of college players yesterday. In the fifth round, for Illinois State, they took a center fielder in John Rave. Sixth round, Dante Biase, a left-handed pitcher from Penn State. Seventh round, they took Noah Murdock, a right-handed pitcher from Virginia. He's 6'8" tall. Eighth round, they took Drew Parrish, a left-handed pitcher from Florida State. Ninth round, Clay Dungan, a shortstop, the third shortstop that the Royals drafted in the draft this year from Indiana State, a little bit older at 23. And the 10th round, they took Anthony Veneziano, a left-handed pitcher from Coastal Carolina. So all of the Royals draft picks yesterday in day two, third round to the 10th round, were all college picks. Of course, Bobby Witt Jr., the number two overall pick, Royals took him in the first round earlier this week, and he's a six-tool player, according to scouts, and the Royals are really excited to have Bobby Witt Jr., who is a really, really talented kid that could be a potential star in the big leagues, but will not be tomorrow. It'll take a little bit of time, maybe 2, 3, 4 years before he comes up to the bigs. Hosmer, I think, took 3 years in the minors before he came up to the bigs. Moustakas, 4. So if you've got expectations for guys drafted this year, how soon they'll be in the bigs, probably best case, I mean, really best case scenario would be 2 years, but more than likely 3 or 4. I usually don't want to rush these guys up and then, you know, mess up their confidence. You want to grow and develop in the minor league system. So the Royals with day two of the draft yesterday. We mentioned UCLA wins the College World Series in women's softball over Oklahoma. OU was the 1 seed, UCLA the 2 seed, their first championship since 2010 with a walk-off single last night. And they swept the series 2-0 after winning game one 16-3. NBA Finals. Game three is tonight. It's the Raptors at the Warriors. And the storyline, really, quite honestly, is all about health. Kevin Durant will not play in game three tonight. Kevon Looney will miss the rest of the series with a broken collarbone. And we know Andre Iguodala's banged up. DeMarcus Cousins coming off the torn quad, but looked to be pretty effective the other night in game two. And Klay Thompson's probably the biggest question mark. He suffered a left hamstring injury that forced him to miss most of the fourth quarter in that game two victory for Golden State in Toronto. He says he wants to give it a go. He feels better, but it's ultimately up to the coaching staff on whether or not he's going to play. He knows he's risking further injury by trying to play through pain, but Klay Thompson wants to play, and I would guess the Warriors will let him play since they don't have Kevin Durant. Iguodala's banged up, no Kevon Looney. And we saw what the Raptors did to the Warriors in the fourth quarter, late in the fourth quarter, in game two. By the way, I've seen some, I don't know how I would put it, I'm trying to be really nice here, some people that don't know anything about basketball putting on social media that Toronto's box and one on Steph Curry in the fourth quarter is embarrassing. How's it embarrassing? Golden State went to final 5 minutes without making a field goal until Iguodala hit a three with 8 seconds to go. Without the box and one defense, the Raptors would have never made that comeback. They were down 12 and got all the way down to 2. It was the right defense. Steph Curry didn't attempt a shot against that box and one. Also, the Warriors, up to that last shot by Iguodala, didn't make a shot from the floor in the final 5.5 minutes against that box and one. And I saw people going, well, that just means you're giving up on your regular defense and you've been doing this all year long. It's called adjusting. You're allowed to adjust and make changes defensively. Trust me, the players have no problem with it. The players want to win. So if a box and one on Steph Curry gives you a better chance to win, then you do it. A triangle and two. You put 4 guys on one guy and 4 other guys can't shoot. You take away the strength of the team. Kevin Durant out. Klay Thompson was out fourth quarter. Who's the shooters on the team? There's only one, Steph Curry. Iguodala hit the three late, granted. But he's not a great outside shooter. Draymond Green's not a good outside shooter. DeMarcus Cousins, you can live with him shooting the three. So who's the guy you take away? If Thompson's hurt and Durant's hurt, who is the guy you take away? You take away Steph Curry. It was a brilliant defensive strategy. Brilliant. And if Iguodala doesn't hit a wide-open three, and yes, he was wide open because they went a box-on-one on Curry and they were trying to trap Curry. Hey, the guy made a 23.5-foot shot. I think you can live with it. The Raptors, where they lost the game, wasn't because of their box-and-one defense. That was a reason why they were in the game and had a chance to win. It's not embarrassing. It's brilliant. It's smart. It's called coaching. It's called adjusting. And Golden State, by the way, if you think it's embarrassing and so forth and so on, well, why couldn't Golden State figure it out? Why did Golden State struggle against it so mightily? Well, I'll tell you why. Because Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant weren't on the floor. If Klay Thompson's on the floor, there is no box in one. So it was a brilliant idea by Nick Nurse, head coach of Toronto. Toronto lost the game because they had open looks. They didn't knock down in the final 3 or 4 minutes. But their that defense, that change to go to a box in one absolutely gave them a chance to win. And they were down two with 26 seconds to go. They had a chance to win. If Iguodala misses the three, they have the ball at half court with a chance to win the game and take a 2-0 lead. If anything, they probably went to the box in one a little bit later than they should have. Of course, Thompson got hurt early in the fourth quarter. So Thompson is important for him to be on the floor, because if he's not, I could see the Raptors using box and one some more tonight. Not the whole game, probably, but for a portion of the game or crunch time, I can see them going to box and one. I guarantee you Golden State's going to address that and has over the last couple of days. Even more reason for Thompson, a second really good shooter, to be on the floor. And that's why Golden State's so tough to defend when they're healthy. You have Durant, you have Curry, you have Thompson. You can't double team them. You can't double team all of them. You double one, you're going to get just absolutely lit up like a Christmas tree by somebody else. And that opens up everything for everyone else if you do double team one guy. But when you have non-shooters and Green and Iguodala, I know, hit a three the other night, but he's not a great outside shooter. Cousins is not a great outside shooter. Quinn Cook's not a great outside shooter. When those other four on the floor and it's Steph Curry, you take away Steph Curry. And to Curry's credit, he didn't force shots, but he also didn't take one. So that's outstanding defense. When the star player on the other team or averages 30 points a game doesn't take a shot the final 5 minutes of the game, fantastic defense. It's not embarrassing. What's embarrassing is somebody saying it's embarrassing, because you're an embarrassment to watching basketball. If you think that was, you think going to a box of one's embarrassing, triangle two, it's called a junk defense. Whatever works. If you're allowed to do it, do it. And the Raptors nearly won the game. So I would imagine the Warriors will have an answer for that box and one if the Raptors throw it out at them. But if Klay Thompson plays tonight, the box and one has to go back into the toolbox. Thompson re-aggravates the hamstring, can't go tonight. I think you're going to see some more of that box and one, and why wouldn't you? Because Golden State didn't do anything against it until a three with 8 seconds to go. And people are like, oh, well, that see, it messed up the strategy. That's why they had a wide-open shot, because they ran a box and one. Yeah, they didn't score for 5 minutes. They were bound to hit one shot. It just so happened the one shot they hit sealed the game. If the Raptors made shots in the final few minutes, the Raptors would have had the lead, and they would have won thanks to the box and one defense. So it'll be interesting to see those adjustments, counter-adjustments. You always see this in a best-of-seven series at any sport, at really any level. Is a team that loses has to adjust. A team that wins feels like, hey, we probably do what we did, but make some minor tweaks. And it's the Raptors' turn to adjust since they lost game two, but it's also the Warriors have to adjust to the way the Raptors played defense against them in the fourth quarter up in Toronto in game two. Game three is tonight in Oakland. Klay Thompson says he's going to give it a go. It's just up to the coaching staff. And we'll see if Golden State can take a 2-1 lead. If you're the Raptors, if you're going to win this series, you probably should win tonight. You win tonight game three, then you're up 2-1. Then Durant may come back on Friday for game four. And if he does, obviously that changes things. No question, a guy of his caliber. So huge game tonight for both teams, certainly. Golden State doesn't want to give home court back right away. But I think they could lose game three and still win another game in Toronto. I do think game three tonight, considering the health of the Warriors, it is. That sounds crazy because I'm talking about the road team here. Usually the home team, it's more important to win. But I do think the Warriors are built to win on the road no matter what the situation is. They've done it 23 straight postseason series. I do believe the Raptors, I won't say it's a must-win tonight because they can win game four at Golden State if they lose game three. But this is their best opportunity to win a game on the road, more than likely in this series. And it's right now in front of them tonight in game three. Raptors versus the Warriors on ABC at 8 o'clock tonight.